Friday, the 11th of October, 2024, episode number 9 of Consistently Above Average. My name is Andrew McGahan, your host who talks to himself for hours on end a week. Luckily for anyone listening to this, only less than 30 minutes of that is recorded and published online. Going straight off the back of last week's episode, the Twitter algorithm has brought us back another cracker this week, and it is of a much more of a lighter tone, and something for you to think about. There is a streamer whose name is Agent 00. Seemingly, he has focused primarily on the NBA 2K games and on Grand Theft Auto. I'll take the internet's word for that, and I would be lying completely if I told you that I had heard of this man more than 48 hours ago, but a clip of his was doing around on my Twitter algorithm. So he was getting a load of grief from his chat and viewers while he was streaming because he said he uses his hands to wash his body in the shower. And while I'll admit that when I heard that, I was thinking, what else would you be using? If you're using, and his argument was, if you're using a cloth, then it's capturing some of the dirt and you're spreading it around. And then it's a damp cloth, so it's going to hold on to the bacteria anyway. And if you're using it more than once, you're just going to be re-rubbing dirt back into yourself. Whereas the opposite is you can be constantly washing your hands while showering with soap. Wash your body with your hands, wash your hands, continue, rinse and repeat. Good use of the word rinse there, actually. Now, the internet being the internet means that this actually then been debated quite a lot on subsequent tweets. And thank you to an author called Aaron, his last name not included, who wrote an article for a website that I will admit also I'd never heard of before, but it is a website with seemingly a large amount of resources on it. It's called lovelyskin.com. Now, aside from the fact that this sounds like it may have been Hannibal Lecter's favourite website at a certain point in time, Adam asked the question, is it better to use a cloth, a loofah, or your hands? He includes pros and cons to all of the above and products that he would recommend you use. The bacteria was raised as a question, as a concern, as a con for both the cloth and a loofah. Hands are fine, but are worse for exfoliating purposes. Oh my God, we didn't even think of exfoliating when it comes to this. Now, that's all I have to say on the matter. I just thought, what an insane rabbit hole of a thread. What sort of rabbit hole did I go down on a Wednesday night trying to get some algorithmic dopamine boosts before bed? And then I'm smacked with this in the face. The comments underneath as well took it a step further, merged into a debate about how Americans hoard toilet paper and whatever, how Eastern civilizations are so far ahead of us when it comes to personal bathing and hygiene around showers and the like. So it did make me think of one last thing. And this is ahead of a trip to Italy next week. You're heading away on a holiday, right? Let's say you're going to Italy, Spain, France, whatever it might be. Put yourself in these shoes right now. Not too far east, but you do get the idea. I want you to sit here Friday morning, whenever it is you're listening to this. Take a moment. What is the thing that you appreciate the most about a holiday away? Okay? When it comes down to it, what do you value the most about that time out of the country? If you're thinking warm weather, yeah, good shout. Time away with a loved one, no problem. Being able to switch off from work and your regular routine, yeah, all very valid. However, you are lying to yourself. You couldn't lie straight in a bed if you think that either of those three are the main answer. The real answer is the bidet that you get in your hotel. The little toilet next to the toilet, realizing how we are absolute chumps over here in Ireland. Our bathrooms do not have that gentle stream of cleansing warm water that you would find in these Eastern European countries. And I have to say, it's a disgrace. It's a disgrace that the bidet culture is not stronger over here in Western Europe. Right. That out of the way, this is what I've been thinking about this week regarding Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and sport in general. And first of all, we've had a few people be in touch over the last week who are currently reading Relentless from Tim Grover. Great to hear. So let's go on that sort of ideology and think that your environment should never be an excuse for your work ethic or commitment. Okay? Do what you can with what you have. That should always be the mantra. This lad that I follow on Instagram, he's a barber. Recently moved to Nashville from California. He was posting the other day, garden style workouts, cinder blocks, squats, all of this sort of stuff, using ropes around trees, like pull downs, all of this sort of stuff. And he's only doing it to stay in shape, maybe out of boredom. This guy's a professional barber, two kids, family. And this man is lamping cinder blocks around the place. But you're telling me that you want to be a fighter, but you can't go for a run 3 times a week because it's cold or something like that. This is going to be two ends of a scale example here. Like somebody maybe who's telling you that, well, that is two ends of a scale, like a fighter versus a barber. Like, I'm sure there's barbers who are fighters, but these are two people on entirely different spectrums of their life. It's like somebody telling you that they'll start something once they get fit or drop a bit of weight, ignoring the fact that starting the thing would do both of those things. They would drop weight and they would get fitter. That type of person is kicking the can down the road, essentially. They're just waiting for the right time for something to be right. And the reality is, there's never going to be a right time. And while it would be beneficial, I don't think it's plausible to be switched on fully year round, although it can help with your routine in general. But expression that I mentioned a couple of weeks ago has stuck with me since. And the sport of jiu-jitsu, by extension, MMA, boxing, other martial arts, it is completely and utterly pay to play. Okay? It doesn't exist in soccer. It doesn't exist in the NBA. It doesn't exist in NFL. It doesn't exist in professional sports, organized sports that have been around for hundreds of years. A recreational five-a-side soccer player can't head off to get private lessons from Ronaldo. But a person can save up enough money to fly to California to get a private lesson from Gui or Rafa Mendes. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe they're not doing it at the moment. But I would bet there's a price. I would say that there is a price that a individual in the world could offer either of those two for an hour-long private as a white belt or as a blue belt. To another degree, maybe amateur MMA fighter. Not throwing shade here. I'm also living at home. Let's say amateur MMA fighter, living at home, save up money, head to one of the best gyms in the world. Let's say 10 years ago, they could have went to Albuquerque, New Mexico, Jackson Winklejohn, and train alongside John Jones, professional athletes, under the best coaches in the world, Brandon Gibson, Greg Jackson, whatever. Okay, anywhere. Absolutely. Yeah, you want to train here? No problem. Sign the waiver. Sign the form. It's going to be this amount for the month. Class run at these times. Change rooms just down there. All right, thanks very much. It's absolutely absurd that we could potentially have access to the greatest coaches in the world. And fair enough, like most things, the limiting factor in terms of entry is not work ethic or ability. It's money. If you were to be spending a longer period of time there under those coaches, then your work ethic and ability and your attitude is what will separate you from the rest. But on face value, anybody could rock up anywhere, at any place in the world, at any time, and be treated the exact same as another person walking in the door, like a local member from down the road who's interested in signing up to get fit. They'd all be given time. And to double down on this here again, environment does not matter for your work ethic. Okay? Now, as a recently curious sea swimmer, I went into the sea twice a couple of weeks ago. Haven't been back since, and it's bothered me that I haven't. And I know it's going to take a couple of consistent weeks of habit stacking to get it into my routine properly. But if you think about it in this way, we're going into the worst time of the year to consider doing something like that. So I consider that the best possible time to build that habit. It would be very easy to get into the ocean multiple times a week when it's nice weather and it's warm. It's less easy to do that now at this time of the year. Both of them are the same task. You're getting into the water. You can't swim properly, so you're treading water. You're staying close to the railings. You're lasting about 2 minutes and then you're getting out and driving home thinking you're brilliant. All right? But In my opinion, those two tasks, let's say October sea swimming versus May sea swimming, are not weighted the same in my mind. One is definitely worth more. And it's also a thing to build that sort of internal confidence in your training and your routine. It should be worth more. Doing what is harder when it is not convenient to do it consistently is worth more than doing something that is easy. Okay? Simpler. Doing what is harder consistently is worth more than doing something that is easy. If you moved me to California with unlimited funds, I'd still be doing roughly the same amount of training that I am now. I might do slightly more thanks to more classes on offer, or the culture of the gym may have X amount of training blocks one after the other that most people do, and you would feel that you would have to try and keep up with that culture. Monkey see, monkey do, 100%. I would probably be studying a little bit more outside of the gym, feeling like I wanted to catch up, get more out of my time while I'm there. But fundamentally, you know what your body's capable of at certain times, what load is going to prevent you from going full whack the next day, and when you need to take a breath, so on and so forth. If I want to compare it to a Premier League reference that's been in Premier League discussion over the last 15 to 20 years or so, could they do it on a rainy Tuesday night in Stoke? Describing, yeah, you can do it when it's nice, when the conditions are fine and the team is trying to play football against you. Can you do it when these bruisers on a windy, wet Tuesday night somewhere in the UK called Stoke, are you able to perform the same way as when the conditions are optimal? And I've used this example recently at our 7 a.m. classes in the gym, that this is the time that it's hardest to keep training. The mornings are colder, the weather is worse, and it's generally more miserable at this time of the year than before. The class structure is still going to be the exact same as it was during the summer when we were walking into the gym and it was bright and the sun was rising. You're going to get the same amount of time as usual, but for yourself, the person listening, there's an unquestionable benefit of getting up at that time when you would rather hit snooze and stay in bed. Okay? There's a bigger benefit of getting up now, in my opinion, and I'll argue that till the day I die, now than compared to the summer. I have lost count of the amount of times that I've had conversations with people from other sports, gyms, teams in Ireland, teams abroad. And you might say, oh, such and such looks good, because you've seen something online or you've seen something from them in a fight. And a lot of the time the response you might get back is, yeah, but they don't train enough, or they don't train hard enough, or they're not committed. And it is generally always the way. The best ones, the ones who stand out at first impression, who you think could have something about them a little bit different or go further than others, or they'll be the first to tell you that they'll go further than others. Behind the curtain, they are awful athletes that over time will burn out and unable to play the long game. Or burn out in the sense that blame other people for not taking responsibilities of things themselves. Say, well, I would have made it if it wasn't for such and such, or if he had coached me properly, I would have made it, or if he hadn't let me down, I would have made it. We don't care. We do not care. I have absolutely no doubt perseverance and the long game is what's going to win time after time. Okay? Now, let's use this as an example. A little stat I've written down here. Couldn't figure it out myself. Would have taken too long before recording. Think of how many people have fought professional MMA in Ireland. Now, keep in mind, professional MMA is just a rule set. You don't have to be a professional athlete to fight professional MMA. Standard. That needs to be understood. Professional, in an MMA sense, is a rule set. It's 5 minutes long, it's in 4 ounce gloves, and it is the unified professional rules of mixed martial arts. In the last 25 years, for example, look at how many of them have made it to the UFC. Off the top of my head, I'm saying that that number is less than 5%. It would have to be less than 5%. Colin Robinson and Stevie Lynch were first. Tom Egan was after that. Then you had the wave of, obviously, Conor McGregor, Norman Park, Cathal Pendred, Paddy Houlihan, Neil Seary, Paul Redmond, Joseph Duffy, Artem Lobov, Richie Smullen, Charlie Ward, Reese McKee, Ian Garry, Dean Barry, Kiefer Crosby, Sean O'Bannon, Ashing Daly, Kaelin Lochran. I don't think I'm forgetting anyone else there. I feel like I could be forgetting somebody else there. The like of Chris Fields on The Ultimate Fighter. Maybe that's about 10%. I don't know. In fact, mid-show, I'm going to have to cancel my voice recording. Cancel my video side of things of the podcast here just for 2 seconds. I'm going to send a voice note to my friend, Andy Stevenson from Severe MMA. I'm in the middle of recording a podcast here and I've just started saying something without planning it. And halfway through now, I'm sending you a voice note. Think of how many people that have fought professional MMA in Ireland in the last 25 years, and then look at how many of them have made it to the UFC. I would guess that the number is less than 5 or 10%. Jesus, well, if it was 10%, that's actually pretty impressive. But the amount of people that have, basically what I'm asking you, Andy, is what would your guess be on the amount of people that have, who are Irish or fought in Ireland or trained in Ireland that have fought a professional MMA fight that ended up making it to the UFC? Have a little think about that and get back to me at your earliest convenience. Sorry for waking you if this does. Goodbye. Sorry about that if I have forgotten someone glaringly obvious there. And I don't think that I forgot anyone. But I'll probably wake up now in an hour or two going, I forgot. Anyway, so if we continue this type of thought process, right? My coach would regularly talk about pillars, okay? And it might be down to the fact that he learnt English as a Brazilian in the north, which is one of the funniest accent combinations that you've ever heard in your life. But essentially, you need pillars. Pillars to support your whole process. You need to have, number one, your diet, your mind, your environment, your training, and your commitment. Those five things all need to be there to be able to push everything on evenly. If you imagine little raising platforms in a ground and a flat sheet of wood over them. If these platforms aren't raising or elevating at close to the same power and percentage as the other ones, that sheet of wood is going to turn sideways and slide off to the ground. Like if you get 80% on the first one, 40% on the second one, 20%, 10%, whatever, that sheet's just going to fly. It's not going to stick. It's not going to raise at the same level. Being good at one will not compensate for the rest over time. It just doesn't work that way. And if we're going to go with percentages that I can't back up, but I will give percentages, unless one thing is done to the absolute extreme, these people that succeed, they must be less than 1% of the total people that try the thing in the world. Has to be. And the example that I would give on that, just to try and finish off on it, is over the last couple of years, have been over in Marbella a few times and I've trained there, all right? At different times of the year. The environment over there is so easy to train in that if you could afford to live there and you were able to digital nomad or whatever, and you were a dedicated athlete, you would be flying, okay? There are several other aspects of that part of the world in particular that could turn your head or make your athletic development not the most important thing in the world. But I was training twice a day in an outdoor gym, one of the nicest places I've ever trained in, one of the nicest people I've ever trained with. There's something unbelievable about a 10 a.m. jiu-jitsu class in the heat outdoors, all right? Walking away from the gym, 25 degree heat, sitting outside for cheap coffees, delicious coffees, having your lunch, having a nap, going back again to train in the evening. It is the easiest thing in the world to do because it's so nice outside. Your body is warm. It's hot. It's a nice environment to be in. All right. And compare that to having to do the same thing in 6 degree wind and rain. You're probably not going to be as enthused about doing it. So it's long-winded to a degree. But one last thing, the mental side of all of this. That is the biggest game. Now, I've had plenty of battles with this side of things over the last 10 years. And I'm certainly not in the best place that I could be. but I'm miles away from the worst that I've experienced, if that makes sense. You can always get better, but I appreciate that I'm not as bad as I have been, all right? So your internal monologue, the voice, the conversation that you have with yourself, your identity, what you view yourself as, that's the thing that people either need to become happy with and accept it, or work towards changing it and find something else that gives them purpose, okay? So I was this interviewer, relatively good speaker, relatively good broadcaster, was quite young. Jeez, look, he's doing well for the age of him. He's only 21. Did you know that? He's only 22 and look at the way he's doing that, blah, 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 blah. Right? Went in one ear, blew the ego up, thought I was 6 foot tall. Fortunately, never got over 6 foot tall. But anyway, that all changed, right? You pull the handbrake, open the emergency door, so to speak, emergency exit. We have to bounce. We have to get out of here. This is not you anymore, right? Now what are you? Who are you now? That sort of dialogue is what kept me away from doing this sort of stuff again for so long, because the pivot changed from broadcaster, reporter, personality, journalist, whatever, towards athlete. And calling myself an athlete is still something that I have trouble doing, because I'm aware that there are people who commit quite a lot of things that I don't commit in certain ways. But to call a spade, it's not unfair to call myself an athlete. All right? As the podcast would suggest, the synopsis, for people in the 51 to 70% range who are consistently above average, not the best, but consistently above average. All of my mates, right? Literally all of them. And this is another example of the conflict. And I couldn't be happier for all of them. I verbalize this to all of them all of the time. Good careers, stable savings, solid income, houses, mortgages, engaged, married, kids, or expecting. Every single one of them. And I couldn't be happier for them to be in the position, because I understand that at different points in their life, they've sacrificed to try and get to those positions. All right? They've worked hard, found their people, they deserve every bit of it. This was something that has attempted to creep into my mind the last couple of years. You don't have those things. All right? It's very easy to look left, look right, look all around you, see what other people have, and be down on yourself because of that. So while I was still a brown belt, I marked out to myself 3 years as a black belt, burning the boats. Give it 3 years until you get your first degree and your black belt, and then reassess, what are you doing? Are you going to get a job? Are you going to keep training? Are you going to look to open a gym? Whatever. First degree black belt, that was the goal. All right? Now, internally, I've pushed that back maybe to 35 years old, as verbalization out loud is the biggest fear of the world. My goal is, as a Master 1 competitor, before I turn 35, is to try and collect as many world and European medals, gi and no gi, as I possibly can in that period. And if I fall short, who cares? At the end of the day, who cares? I'll have prepared with the intention of the person trying to achieve those things, and I will come out for it, hopefully speaking, all of the better. I'm on my own little path there. My mates are on their own little paths there. What we're both trying to do in life is different. Those things, all going to plan, will come for me in the future. But I shouldn't be hard on myself now that I am in a certain percentage of, say, people who've gotten black belts, people who've competed, finished off as a brown belt, ranked 6th in the world. Those are all things that I'm very proud of. It's just not normal. It's not normal compared to what other people have. And sometimes when you're exposed to that, like, what do other people have? What do you see what people are doing? You might think, oh, am I doing the right thing? So essentially, if you are not prepared to put the same amount of work in when you have to come back to your house, still living at home, childhood bedroom, sleeping in a gym, sleeping in a dorm, whatever, getting by week after week, training in the pursuit of something that is bigger than yourself. If you're not prepared to keep it going when it's going bad, then selfish, or as bad as this may sound, or harsh, you don't deserve the opportunity to keep going after it when it's going good for you. Keep the same energy. Like when we're in the middle of winter, you're defrosting the car window at 6 o'clock in the morning, then that is what you're after. If you're not prepared to take the good with the bad, what are you even doing? What are you even doing with yourself? And I'm sorry if I've struck a nerve here, because I've definitely been given harsh truths myself in the past. If I've struck a nerve, use it to just realize, light the firework up your arse and just go that little bit further. You have people that believe in you. You have people that want to see you do well. You have people that may be supporting you financially. You owe not only yourself, or not only other people, you owe yourself the mental clarity of knowing that you gave everything you could have to try and become the best possible version of yourself. That you didn't leave a stone unturned, as they say. All right? Now, a little bit of a long one there. Sorry about that. Okay? One question that I wanted to answer, but instead went off on a tangent, so we're going to focus on it next week in Rome. At what belt did you have the biggest revelations, and what were the biggest game-changing concepts I learned along the way? Okay, perfect. First question for next week. You can submit questions at any time. Sounds better. We'll say time, though. Through direct message on Instagram at consistently above average, where I will be spamming the life of this show on that page for the next while to try and trick you, Mark Zuckerberg, trick your algorithm in the next little while. So give the page a follow if you haven't already. Please do. Like, subscribe, keep up to date. As mentioned at the top of the hour, there's only 30 minutes or so a week of my thoughts that escape my head and land into a microphone. So thank you for coming along with that journey so far. And finally, regularly I would write things down quite a lot. Okay, little notes, little stories, little scenarios that you see. I can be quite annoyingly to myself observant in situations sometimes, maybe overstimulated by certain situations. All right, I typed this out in about 3 minutes eating my coffee and toast this morning after training because it stuck with me earlier on that morning. It's not a poem, it's not a story. Is it a prose? Maybe it is, I'm not sure. This is the ending of the podcast anyway. So you can dip out now if you don't want to hear it. Remember though, this time next week, we're going to be in Rome, episode on location. Cannot wait. Have a great week, and I will chat to you next Friday morning. Thursday morning, Dundalk, 6:20 a.m. It's much darker this morning, and there's a definite dew hanging over in the air. You can see surface cold or droplets on the car when you're leaving in the mornings. It's dark to one side of the sky, but as you on your drive, you start to get a glimpse of the eastern sky. You can see the colour is turning into a more inviting and fresh dark blue. Perfect symbolisation of a fresh autumn morning. At a petrol station forecourt, the weather is giving the illusion that the car exhausts around you are having to work overdrive. Hot mist cutting through the cold morning air as bodies pull themselves from the seats of their car to peer through the illuminated glass of an early morning deli counter. The meter is increasing at a pace that annoys you at the disparity of money leaving your account versus the litres of diesel arriving into your car. You look past it, see the responsible ones already on the road, either the ones who had the foresight to get their fuel last night or have the luck not to need any until tomorrow morning. Back to the gauge, and the reflection will show you of the outlines of the other cars pulling into the bays behind you as you slowly tick closer to 40 euros of diesel. There's a familiarity and consistency that's appreciated with this. 5 minutes too late or 5 minutes too early, and you'll miss the regular faces of the people you see in the garage. Maybe they're running behind too, and you'll catch them on those days as well. Words unspoken in the queue for a portable coffee, apart from an occasional, it's fairly shite out there, isn't it, amongst strangers who are more familiar with each other than the rest. The chirpy cashier, who you've come to know over the last little while, knowing that his overnight shift is about to come to an end, either ready to start job number two or climb back into bed as the rest of the world has just left theirs. There's an appeal to it that's very understated, a routine that is grounding. I used to laugh at people who are very particular. This day was shopping, this day was haircut, this day was whatever. But as I started to get older, I realised that myself and other people have their routines and comforts. And as far as I'm concerned, only psychopaths get their diesel in different petrol stations regularly, And the same should go for their coffee too.